Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Dave Weiner here. Just finishing up a Grateful Dead song in the background. You know, Trump says you're going to be so tired of winning. I think he left a word out. I think he meant to say you're going to be so tired of me winning. I mean, it's so funny. This morning, I woke up singing this song in my head, You Win Again. It's not one of the most famous Grateful Dead songs, but it's a good one. And it's part of the whole theory that most of the songs of the world are about heartbreak and loss and sadness. And because when you're feeling happy, you don't write a song. You don't have the time to do it because you're off busy doing the things that you're happy about. So anyway, there's this conversation that's starting to happen amongst the, I don't know how to characterize them, but I think of them as internet newbies, because I'm such an old bee, and all the things that they go through, they're different because the times are different, because the internet is so widely used. I mean, I read one of these guys wrote a piece. They all write for academic journals or for, you know, political magazines and stuff. And this person wrote a piece that said that the Communication Decency Act created the internet, which is funny because I was blogging that while it was happening. You know, I mean, we were very up in arms about that, what they were proposing to put into it. And ultimately, it was the parts that we didn't like were declared unconstitutional. Obviously, they were. They were complete abrogations of the First Amendment. What was really sad was that the New York Times wouldn't write an editorial defending free speech on the internet. And even though the New York Times was one of the pioneers in the news world, they got on the web very quickly. And so they didn't fight it. Obviously, if the New York Times was publishing on the web, how could they not support the First Amendment? But never happened. They never wrote the editorial. And I was very disappointed. Anyway, so there's this crowd. I don't know when they started using the web. I would guess probably around the time Twitter started getting popular. I mean, when I say using the web, I mean actively creating on the web. Tools had to get that easy, and that's fine. It's all good. But now they're starting. Cancel culture has just become a wreck. I mean, a complete mess. it's taken some, I think, really gross examples of retribution and lack of proportion. I mean, this person commits, the punishment should somehow be appropriate to the sin. And there ought to be a chance at redemption. We don't do the death penalty in the United States. And the internet death penalty is very harsh. And it's administered really for anything, if they can get away with it. I mean, whoever the people are that are, you know, instigators of cancel culture, if they can get away with it, they'll take as much of your life as they can get. And they'll say, well, you know, this is our First Amendment rights. We're free to do this. It's a question as to whether or not they're free. Not all speech is non-uncriminal. I mean, you're free to scream fire in a crowded movie theater, but you can also be sued for doing that. I'd probably put in jail as well. So, you know, when people talk about their right not to wear a mask, I mean, there's nowhere in the Constitution that says you can't be told that you have to wear a mask. How would they have even said that? I mean, there have always been rules of decorum. And, you know, I mean, if you're infectious, your breath is like an excrement. It's a very dangerous thing that comes out of your body. And you're not allowed to walk around without pants on in most places. And you're certainly not allowed to take a crap in the middle of a store, even though your crap might just smell bad, it probably isn't going to actually hurt anyone. But your breath is killer potentially, and we just don't know whether it is or it isn't. So we say, okay, we're just going to cover our mouths. Maybe we'll stop doing it when we finally manage to rid ourselves of this virus that's transmitted that way. Or maybe we'll be like Japan, where it's become a norm and people wear the masks. And that's why, presumably, they've had no damage from the virus at all because they were wearing the masks the day the virus showed up. Everybody was wearing a mask. No virus. Bye, virus. Doesn't catch on. Doesn't have a chance to transmit. It's got to try again because it isn't going to make it there. Anyway, I have had cancel culture applied to me a number of times, and it has never succeeded. Probably because I'm not fireable most of the time. I don't really have a job. So it's been kind of funny when people have tried to find a way to hurt me that way and found either a brick wall, like when I was in university, a fellowship at Berkman, for example. No doubt, I didn't ever hear about it, but there's no doubt that people found out who my superiors were and then harassed them. But they developed their own opinion of my work, and there was nothing ever that I did that required me to even be reprimanded. I mean, I believe in the mission of the university, and blogging has very similar mission to the university. It was very compatible. Blogging has had a very positive effect on universities, as far as I'm concerned. I think the sooner we got that technology in use in the university, the further along we would be. And it worked. I mean, it really worked. Anyway, so cancel culture is why I picked up the microphone to talk to you today. Because I don't think people have ever heard the other side of the story, which is what happens to a person who has cancel culture applied to them. And I can think of a number of examples of people that I think the crowd did things that were completely indefensible. And I'm going to tell you the story of one of them. I'm not going to use the guy's real name, although if you look on my blog hard enough, you'll find it because I've told this story before. Excuse me. So this guy was had a job in academia. And he also started a blogging community. And it was very successful, one of the most successful. And it was largely his organizational work that made it work. I mean, everybody would say that in all the things they posted. They would say, and of course, this couldn't happen without Mr. X. And so I had interviewed him once on a podcast. This is when I was at NYU. And I found it impossible to get a word in edgewise. I mean, I'm pretty good at getting in there, but I couldn't. And so I just let him go. And 20 minutes of him just, and there was another guest, by the way, on the podcast. She didn't get to say a word, and it was just pissed me off. But who wanted 20 minutes of me fighting with the guy, rather just let him go. It wouldn't have made good radio. So, and then a couple of years later, I was visiting his school, and they had a dinner. All the people who wanted to meet me, and basically we all went to dinner. And when I arrived, the seat next to this guy was open, and I have forgotten. This guy likes to dominate conversations. I had forgotten. And so I sat down next to him. And I imagine after the fact, everybody was quite relieved that they didn't have to sit in that seat. And what I got was both inappropriate and humiliating for me. I mean, I have to say, because in this context, not only does he dominate, but he tells the most intimate stories about himself and his sex life and his wife and what it was, what his life is like and how terrible it is and how he despairs. I mean, it's just, he's going on, and I keep trying to change the subject and nothing works. He's just like a train or freight train. There's a Grateful Dead song, freight train rolling down the line. He's gone. Oh, that's the, no, it's the other song. He's gone, gone. Anyway, so, all right. So I get through the dinner and whatever, and it's like really disturbing. And then, I don't know how far in the future after that it was, but I read a story on a blog or something where there's a woman who is telling a story about the same guy. And it's pretty much the story I just told you about how he's in her office, I think, with him. And he won't let her get a word in edgewise. She can't change the subject. And it's all about his personal life. I don't think he ever propositioned her. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was the same story he was telling me. It was almost as if it didn't matter if it was me or her. And presumably, well, of course, then people said, lots of other people said, you know, well, I've been there. He's a real piece of work. I was very upset. I was very, it was very inappropriate. It left me scarred. All those things, true. I had experienced it myself. And so then the question is, now, okay, so here we are. Those are all the facts, basically. I mean, there probably are many other facts, but this is enough just for the sake of this discussion. So, all right, what do you do about this guy? He can't continue to behave the way he has been behaving. That's for sure. Is anything he did criminal? I don't think so. that's the problem here. I don't think he broke any laws. I don't. In my case, I don't think he even broke. He certainly broke norms, and it would certainly be something that his faculty would discipline him for. Probably. Maybe they would fire him. But I think they should have been left to make that decision on their own, how to deal with this. And I think that in making that decision, I would hope that they would balance against his character flaws, which were really there, I mean, against the contributions he's made. And there was no question at all that he, I mean, I was aware of his contributions long before I was aware of the problems. I'm sure the problems were there, right? But the contributions were there too. And is this a situation that requires punishment? Number one. Number two is, could it possibly be something that we help him with? Because there's a whole nother way to look at this, that this is a really loud cry for help. This is a person who doesn't know how to ask for help. And so this is how he does it. No, I don't know if that's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe he was a pervert and this is how he got off. In other words, you know, the story, me sitting there, him dominating me is how he got off. And then later that night, he would literally get off because of this experience. The negative part of it. I mean, I've had those experiences too. I've written about them. I mean, I understood about the whole idea of women feeling their bodies being invaded by unwelcome touch. When it happened to me, I was riding my bike in Manhattan and this asshole literally forced me to almost, I mean, I had to come to a stop from like 20 miles an hour, which is max speed for me, going downhill. I had to hit the brakes, and I know from experience it's happened that when you hit the brakes really hard, sometimes you go over the fucking handlebars and break ribs and maybe worse. Now, I was able to keep the bike under control, but I was really angry, and he was caught in a line of cars waiting at a traffic light, and I pulled up inside of him, and I asked him to roll down the window. I said, you know, you almost killed me, and so then I rode on and waited at the light in front, and the guy gets out of his car, and he comes, he says, why are you so upset? You know, there's your gaslighting, right? The issue isn't that I'm upset. Of course I'm upset. You almost killed me. Being upset isn't the point. The point is, you almost killed me. I didn't say any of this because who the fuck wants to engage with this person? Look what he's doing. He says, I want to give you a big hug. And there are all these people watching. And I'm like, I don't know, much bigger than this guy. I could push him off me if I wanted to. I could fight him even if I wanted to. Or I could just stand there and take it. That's what I did. I said, if I stand here and take it, I'll be able to go on with my bike ride. If I do anything other than that, there will be witnesses and I'll be in court for years and probably end up paying money. And I made a good decision, except I felt like fucking miserable. I mean, and I wrote a piece about this and I said, now I understand a whole bunch of what I didn't understand before, of how awful it must feel when somebody does something to you, to your body. And when you do your calculation, you realize that there's just no point fighting it. No. He didn't rape me, but it felt like a rape. Because he disgusted me. Let's be honest. There was nothing about this guy that I felt affection for. Anyway, so I asked the question about this friend, the guy who with the big story. And I don't know the answer to it, except I wish we had tried. And I wish there would have been some way to put the rage of the crowd, their offense, and put it in its place. That not make it the thing, because they threaten the university, you know? So now the university has to decide this, the same way I had to decide about the hug. The hug was wrong. I didn't want the hug. I was entitled to prevent the hug if I could. The university looked at it and said, well, you know, we could try to do this the way we would like to do it, or we could just fire the guy. And that's what they did. And nobody's hired him ever since. This was, I don't know, years and years ago. And I see him on, you know, Facebook, and I'm just like, I wish there was something I could do for him, because I think he needed help, and I think there was something redeemable about him. And I think destroying his life is the ugliest, worst possible thing we could do. And yeah, I care. What can I say? We lost there. And we do it all the time. So I do think that in the case of the woman who called, I don't remember, they both had the same last name. The guy, the black guy who she called the police on, said he won't participate in her prosecution, that she suffered enough. And I go, yeah, thank you. Let's, now, at least someone, the person who was offended here, who truly was the person who was offended, who didn't get killed by the police, by the way, who is alive to tell us what he thinks, says, okay, enough already. She heard you. She's not doing it again. Problem solved, folks. And certainly the example was set in a way very eloquent. His cause was a huge winner. It doesn't have to be any more of a winner. It's not winning to destroy somebody's life. Another way of looking at it. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye.